Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports, and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports, and the host of the 312 Show on AM 1590 WCGO here in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts. You will find us. Make sure to follow Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369 is the text and voicemail line. Hit us up. Save that number in your phone as Locked On Bulls. Once again, 331-979-1369. Interact with us wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show. We'd love to hear from you. Obviously, tonight's a big night with the lottery going on, so we'd love to hear all of your reactions, and if we get enough of those, we'll take them all tomorrow on tomorrow's episode. Just kind of break down where the Bulls are exactly going to pick, but we want to hear your opinion about it. So 331-979-1369, or you can hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Matt, what's going on? I know you and I were really excited this morning because ESPN dropped that awesome trailer. Finally, we are getting a Michael Jordan 90s Bulls-centric 30 for 30 from ESPN. I think a lot of Bulls fans have been asking and pleading for this since ESPN 30 for 30s really started. Are you excited? Anything disappointing other than the fact that we've got to wait almost a year for it?
I mean, we didn't get a specific what month in 2019 release. All we know is that it's coming out in 2019. And that still means that we have to wait at least, 7 months? Like, it better be coming out at midnight on January 1st. I don't know if I can wait that long. Honestly, I've been waiting and waiting for 30 for 30 to do this documentary, whether it was about the dynasty or like the one of the specific seasons or Michael Jordan. It seems like they're sort of going to blend some of that together, with the focuses being on Jordan's career arc and then a big focus on that final championship run in 97-98. The documentary is called The Last Dance, and that's what Phil Jackson labeled the sort of season outlook plan that he gave to everybody on that roster coming into training camp in the fall of 1997, because everybody involved knew that that was it. You know, Jordan, Rodman, Pippen were all getting older. Phil Jackson and Krause were already on the outs and knew that a Jackson contract extension was not happening. Everybody knew that it was, all right, let's get this second three-peat. This is going to be it. So it's a perfect title for the film. And I mean, the thing that catches my eye when ESPN Media Zone made this press release this morning is that the film is, quote, anchored by more than 500 hours of never-before-seen footage from the team's last championship run in the 97-98 season. I don't even know what the term never-before-seen footage means in the world of the Bulls dynasty, because any footage that's out there, I have watched it, and I have watched it 800 times. So I am so insanely eager to see what that means. Never before seen, you know, I'm picturing some locker room stuff, some interviews and little, you know, videos and sound bites here and there that are truly never before seen. And I mean, I'm a sucker for this stuff. It's like, when it comes to the Bulls dynasty, I am a heroin addict. I cannot get enough. And it's cruel. It's cruel that they released this trailer right now, today, and then said, hey, this will be out sometime next year. It's so mean. It's so mean, but I don't care. I'm still excited.
Just building the hype up for this documentary series. I think the cool part, too, maybe for some millennial fans that we have out there, some millennial Bulls fans that aren't old enough to really remember watching these games live, and I can attest to that as one person who, you know, obviously did my research, went back and watched the games, but it's kind of not the same. It's not the same as seeing it live and remembering places you were when Jordan hit big shots or these games came down to the wire. So I think it's going to be a cool kind of history lesson, I think, for a lot of younger Bulls fans out there who like to make the argument that Michael Jordan's better than LeBron James. I think this will give them a little bit more context. The cool thing about ESPN, though, in these 30 for 30s is not only do they pick different directors for every 30 for 30, but like you just said, unseen film, unseen video footage, interviews, things that we've never seen before. And that's kind of crazy now in 2018. We think about it, really, the 90s were kind of that cusp, that last real era before everything just goes public on social media. It's kind of weird when you think back to that time. No iPhones yet. The internet was just at its like baby stage to where it was now. And you think about it, if you took that 90s Bulls run and you stuck it in this current age right now with the way social media is, I think things would have went way different. Storylines would have been shaped a lot differently, too. It's just kind of crazy to think about, and think about all the stuff that they might have had saved in a vault for like the last, 10, 15, 20 years. Saving it up for this documentary, I think, is pretty cool. And it's kind of reminds me, it's like one of the last things in terms of unseen footage or unseen, unknowledgeable things that fans will have from these 90s Bulls. I mean, you can even think about some of the other stories that they did about the 80s and the 70s. I mean, when they did the Pistons run with the Bad Boys.
Oh, the Bad Boy Pistons 30 for 30 is fantastic.
All of these 30 for 30s, I think, are collectively really cool, just because it's one of the few times I feel like in present day we get to see things that we've never seen before. Like, usually when somebody says, oh, you've never heard this or seen this, there's somebody out there who has. But I think it's cool when you put it in a documentary series, and it's going to be 10 hours long, too. So
that's the good thing, because if they tried to squeeze this story into even a 1.5 or 2 hour, which is usually what 30 for 30 is, right? Like in a TV window, including commercials, somewhere between 1.5 and 2 hours, you can't tell the story of the Bulls dynasty in that amount of time. You just can't.
So I think between that and just like thinking about it now, like, they try to do it 30 for 30 on like this Warriors team or maybe LeBron's run one day. So much different, because for the most part, I feel like everything we really know about and have seen from these guys, especially in this new era, like, you can find things on social media. You can find everything you need on the internet. Whereas back in these 90s runs, you didn't have the internet. You didn't have these things that you could just quickly search up, watch, read. I think it's going to be a different perspective on what the 90s Bulls really looked like. And I, like you'd said, I'm really excited for the 500 hours of unseen footage from just this era. Between that and, like I said, 30 for 30, ESPN, if there's something that ESPN does do right, it is these 30 for 30s. I was telling you, too, I think the thing that makes it the best is that they partnered with Netflix. I think that was one of their biggest things. I thought they were going to do the thing where, hey, sign up for ESPN Plus. Oh, by the way, you have to pay $4.99 a month to be able to watch this series. They did that with the Kobe Bryant thing. I think they got a lot of pushback when they did it with the Bobby Knight 30 for 30. They advertised and broadcasted that for like 2 months before they released it, and then they kind of threw it in there on the sly, like, oh yeah, by the way, you got to sign up for our subscription package in order to watch this. I think that did them a disservice for their 30 for 30s, and it's kind of cool. It's definitely cool that they partnered with Netflix. I'll be curious to see if they have any influence on the way things are run and how they push it out to people, and just the overall layout of the actual documentary compared to the way that maybe they would broadcast it on ESPN. So very, just definitely interesting things going on. But yeah, like you said, I can't wait till 2019. I think this was an absolute tease by ESPN.
It's so mean. Maybe it's a little bit of good luck for the NBA draft lottery tonight. You know, they released the trailer today. All sorts of Bulls fans are feeling all sorts of nostalgic and emotional and all sorts of nice, fun vibes around a trailer like that. And all of the excitement around it, maybe, who knows, it gives us a little bit of luck tonight. The other thing that I do want to mention is that you talked about how, you know, 30 for 30 docs have all sorts of, you know, a wide variety of different directors, and that's one of the things that makes them great. In this case, it is a repeat director, but that's not necessarily bad news, because the director of this Bulls, The Last Dance doc, Jason Heyer, Heyer, H-E-H-I-R, not sure about the pronunciation of his last name, but he is the same guy who directed the Fab Five 30 for 30, which is great. The nice. 85 Bears 30 for 30, which, no joke, made me cry. It was so good, it made me cry. And the Andre the Giant one that just came out, which is also, if you haven't seen it, absolutely fantastic. So that dude has three very well-directed 30 for 30s under his belt already. And he's going to be doing this Bulls one. So I'm really happy about that.
So maybe this is good vibes for the lottery coming up tonight, which we will get into. But we want to kind of talk about some playoff action here. So we're going to do that on our next segment. We are going to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. But when we come back, we're going to talk about playoffs. Obviously, we've got game ones to go through in the Western and Eastern Conference Finals. Talk a little bit about LeBron. Talk about that fast-paced game yesterday between the Warriors and Rockets. And so much more. And then we'll get to the lottery at the end of the show. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. We'll be back in 60 seconds. All right, Matt, let's dive into these Western and Eastern Conference Finals. These games, everything we thought they were going to be? Probably not, but certainly still entertaining, to say the very least. That Celtics and Cavs one, probably not as entertaining as last night's game against the Warriors and the Rockets. LeBron doing the classic LeBron at the end of his post-game press conference, kind of running down scenarios off the top of his head. We had Draymond Green getting fired up in the first quarter of last night's game. Anything that surprised you so far through game one of either the Eastern or the Western Conference Finals?
No. I guess that's my short answer is no. I'm not surprised. I expected the Warriors to win game one because I believe they're the better team. And even though Steph Curry had, by Steph Curry accounts, a quiet pedestrian night, Durant was insane on the offensive end, got anything he wanted. And for whatever reason, the Rockets didn't think it was important to guard Klay Thompson. And even though Harden did his thing and poured in 40-plus, it didn't matter because everybody else for the Rockets came up small. Chris Paul disappeared in the fourth quarter, as Chris Paul tends to do in playoff games. PJ Tucker and Trevor Ariza, they got nothing out of them. They got nothing out of Luke Mbamute. And then in game one of Cavs Pacers, and we got game two on deck tonight, excited for that. It was a LeBron game one feel out, right? How many times have we seen game ones from LeBron like that, where he's not very assertive or aggressive on the offensive end? He doesn't look to dominate offensively or attack the rim the way we all know he can, and just kind of lets his teammates dictate things and the pace and the flow, and he just kind of stands back and observes. And he said as much post-game. He was like, yeah, I was just, you know, trying to feel out how they were going to go about trying to guard me and play me, and now I'm going to analyze all that and come in to game two with a different approach. And usually when we have one of those games where everybody says, wow, that LeBron game was really bad, and LeBron's team unexpectedly dropped game one, LeBron comes out in game two and does LeBron things, and usually he evens the series. So I expected Boston to win that game one because I think they're the better team, and LeBron, I expected him to have one of his game one feel out games, and I expected the Warriors to win game one. So no big surprises. But do I think either of these series were decided after one game? No, I don't.
This is probably arguably one of LeBron's worst games. I mean, there's probably only, less than a handful of games we can really say LeBron has been terrible in. And he wasn't even really terrible last night. He just wasn't knocking down shots. And credit more to the Celtics than LeBron than anything else. You know, the Celtics throttled the Cavaliers. I mean...
Oh, that Cavs defense was non-existent.
And it was just... I can't imagine, and I know I've repeated this over and over again. I said this in the last series against Toronto, right even before the series had started. I said, I can't imagine that LeBron's role players are going to play as bad as they did in round one. I feel like that's the same scenario here. Like, the Cavaliers in game one shot 15% from three, 4 for 26. I can't imagine that's gonna stay the same, especially if LeBron has anything to do with it. LeBron, I think, missed. Yeah, he was 0 for 5 from 3.
Well, LeBron himself was 0 for 5
from downtown. J.R. Yeah. Smith was 0 for 3. Kyle Korver was 1 for 5. Kevin Love, 1 for 4. LeBron was minus 32 in the plus-minus. Teddy Osmond in 7 minutes was a plus 3. Everybody else was negative in the plus-minus. More credit to the Celtics and Brad Stevens as a whole for being able to command this lead, to come out and to completely dominate the Cavaliers in that first quarter, scoring 36 points to really set the tone at home. I keep thinking about this, and I know this is going away from this series, but I keep trying to ask myself and figure out what the Celtics are going to do next year. Like, I know we're still in the playoffs here, but like, it's kind of hard not to think about, even with Kyrie out and with Gordon Hayward out, and you've got all your young players playing so well and the chemistry is so great, how does that mesh next year when you bring in those two superstars? You're going to command the ball a ton and maybe disrupt a little bit of the things that are going on and are going well in this playoffs for this Celtics team. But that's the same thing. Going back to your point about LeBron, this is totally a feel-out game. And I was watching with my roommates yesterday, and I told them, you know, they're like, oh, LeBron played terrible. You know, this is, I was like, no. Relax. LeBron, I think, has lost what?
So he lost game one against the Pacers this year. He lost game one against the Bulls in the conference semis in 2015. He lost game one against the Pacers in conference finals in 14 or 13, whenever that was. And he also lost game one to the Bulls in the conference semis in 13, the Derrick Roseless Bulls. And 1 year ago today, he lost game one to the Bulls in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2011. Guess what? He won all those series. Most of them in five games, four straight following a game one loss. So
it's
there you
so
go.
Ridiculous. All right, let's get real quick to the Warriors and Rockets game, because things got chippy last night. Draymond Green, is it just me? I love Draymond Green. Let's just put that out there to preface this. But is it just me, or should he have been tossed out of that game last night on a couple different instances? I mean, man, setting high picks at the half court line, I mean, with his arms pretty much at his shoulders after he had already gotten a technical.
I mean, if you want to call, no, absolutely not. If you want to call that a foul because he was a bit aggressive setting that pick and his arms came up a little bit, fine, call that a foul. That is absolutely not deserving of attack, in my opinion. He got off to a really hot-headed start, and he clearly needed to reel himself in emotionally and mentally. But no, I don't think that Draymond at any point deserved to get tossed out of that game.
I mean, how about the foul in the corner on P.J. Tucker? Granted,
P.J. Tucker dragged him to the ground.
He did, I know, and he hooked him. You could see it. When Draymond went up for the block, P.J. Tucker hooked him, but Draymond Green got up off the floor and was like, maybe 12 inches from the ref's face, like screaming, just after he'd gotten a technical from James Harden. By the way, good job by James Harden. James Harden, even though he completely balled out yesterday, he's doing exactly what somebody on this Rockets team needs to do, and that's troll and get in Draymond Green's head. And I think James Harden did that early on yesterday, while the Warriors were still able to come out on top and to pull away in that second half. I mean, James Harden's going to have to continue to do this all series long and just get under Draymond Green's skin. See, the combination of all three of those things happening, where James Harden got Draymond Green all fired up, Draymond Green coming off that foul screaming and yelling, plus that hard pick. Like, I'm not saying he should have gotten tossed out from that, but I think it was just a combination of things in that maybe if it wasn't Draymond Green, maybe if it was some other player, there would be a little bit more of a conversation about whether or not he should have been tossed out of that game or had a second technical. I think that's at least a conversation. I don't know if I don't think I'm completely crazy in saying that. There were some pretty damn hard fouls and some scrappiness going on. And what we've seen from the NBA and what they've called and given technicals to before, I think, played to my factor of saying, well, some of those, like, normally those are called technicals. On Draymond Green last night, they weren't. I'm glad they didn't toss him out of the game, because we remember a couple years ago when that happened and Draymond Green missed a game because of the whole kicking in the nuts situation.
I mean, let's be real. The Warriors are three-peat champs right now if he doesn't get that questionable Game 5 suspension.
Throughout this series, I think the one thing that I noticed last night, and I think is going to be a big problem for Houston, is Clint Capella getting run off the floor. He as much as he played really well last night, the man, like, he can only do so much in terms of keeping up pace with that Warriors team. James Harden and Chris Paul played well, I thought, shot the ball for the most part really well. But then again, the Warriors' defense are just like clamps. It's unbelievable. And they had, what, they gave the Rockets a 24-second violation three times in that first half. So what are your, I guess, what are your what's the Rockets' ultimate game plan going into game two, trying to figure out this Warriors team? How do they stop Kevin Durant or Steph Curry or Klay Thompson? Or, I mean, not, well, even stop, but really limit them.
I mean, you can't. I think we all found out last night that nobody on that Rockets team can guard Kevin Durant when Kevin Durant is in the zone. And he was in the zone last night. I mean, he was, you know, hitting shots off the dribble, hitting pull-ups, driving, attacking, you know, going down and working in the post. And it didn't matter. They tried to put everybody on. Ariza, Tucker, Capella, Paul, Harden, they all tried to guard him. Honestly, the only person who had one or two possessions where forced him into a difficult shot from the outside and he missed was Nene. And that dude is like 85 years old. And he's not playing. He played 6 minutes in that game. And he was the only one who actually looked like maybe he could stop Kevin Durant. And really, by stop, I mean he just forced him into a shot that he didn't make. The Rockets, you know, I said I didn't think either of these series were decided after game one. If either of them is close to being decided already, it's Warriors over Rockets, I think. The Rockets don't have a prayer in this series. They really don't. Nobody can guard Durant. And, I mean, clearly Steve Kerr has made it a mission defensively for the Warriors to eliminate all of the guys around James Harden. James Harden, you want to drop 40, 45? Cool. Go ahead. You're a great offensive player. We'll let you do that. But look at what his role players did. Yeah, Chris Paul had 23, but he got most of those before fourth quarter where he vanished. And you got 9 points combined between Ariza, Tucker, Anderson, Luke Mbah, Mute. 9 points between those five role players. Eric Gordon had 15 off the bench. Gerald Green had a couple of three-pointers. That's it. This Rockets team, unless those role players actually do their job and hit those threes, they might be able to win a game or maybe two if they shoot the lights out and outscore the Warriors. But let's also remember that the Warriors, even after one game, proved again to be the more mentally tough team than the Rockets. Rockets, a lot of times during that game, were looking at the refs, whining, complaining about calls. Draymond had his little beef with the refs in the early going, but then the Warriors settled down and they executed down the stretch, while the Rockets, their offensive possessions, once the Warriors adjusted and took away that switch that Harden was getting onto either Steph or Looney, who couldn't guard him, then the Rockets were struggling to get open looks. And the Warriors, meanwhile, between Kevin Durant and the Rockets getting, you know, losing Klay Thompson in all sorts of places around the court, we're scoring at will. And I don't see that changing.
Unstoppable. They tried 4, 5, 6 different guys on Kevin Durant. It's still just unstoppable. I think the craziest part, too, is like Steph Curry only had 18 points in this game, but he was vital to the way that offense was running and flowing, and especially getting Kevin Durant open looks. Another person was Klay Thompson, knocking down 6 three-pointers in this game. I think a combination between those two guys, I don't know who you could possibly put on Kevin Durant to stop him. I don't know if you go to a double team or what the Rockets are going to have to do in order to try and not, I guess their number one goal should be make sure Kevin Durant doesn't beat you. Let Steph Curry, let Klay Thompson, and let Draymond Green beat you, I guess. I guess that would be your number one goal, your number one focus. I think you brought it up, though, right? The Rockets kind of gave up, I felt like, especially in that fourth quarter, coming off that halftime where the game was tied at half. And I think they came out and were slow and just kind of out of gas. I think Mike D'Antoni said it probably best in their post-game press conference when he said, you know, there's nothing really we can do when you've got Kevin Durant knocking down every shot from all over the place and he's beating guys on the floor, four or five different guys on the floor. He said, we just got to do a better job of switching. And he said, I think we were out of gas after that first half, and that kind of exposed us. I think the one thing with the Rockets, for me at least, is the key is to slow things down. And I know that's hard to do against a Warriors team who wants to just run up and down the floor. And for the most part, the Rockets have done that all season long too and have done it really well. For me, though, I feel like the Rockets game should be slowing it down a little bit. Let James Harden play one-on-one isolation and go at these guys instead of trying to play to the pace of the Warriors, where at times I felt like the Rockets were doing that and they were getting torched. They were getting absolutely torched. And it doesn't help that some guys coming off their bench, especially in that second quarter where the Warriors kind of made a little bit of a run again, had guys stepping up. Like, even Nick Young hit three threes in this game, like wide open shots. So I think in a combination of, yeah, you're going to get 41 and 23 out of Chris Paul, but you need something more out of one of these guys. Trevor Ariza, you've got to knock down some threes. Eric Gordon, 6 for 13. He's got to be better off the bench. And like you had said, some of those other role players who put up goose eggs.
Dude, Luke Mbah-Mute was 0 for 6, and I'm pretty sure all six of those were missed layups.
I was going to say, he had two in a row on two straight possessions where it's like, you're tall enough, you can dunk. Why don't you just go up and dunk the ball?
I mean, that's why I said, I think the Rockets, if they have a better effort from their role players, can win a game, maybe two, in this series. I mean, they just pretty much, other than Eric Gordon, got nothing from their role players last night. And people talked about the Rockets being a sneaky good defensive team all season long, and it's not just the D'Antoni offense. And sure, there is some truth to that. And this is the team that won the most games throughout the regular season. They're the one seed. But it doesn't matter. If the Warriors have all of their pieces healthy and they are running their offensive system, and it's, all right, well, either you try to take away KD or you try to take away Steph or you try to take away Klay, it doesn't matter. They have so many offensive weapons. The Rockets are decent defensively, but they're not. We saw last night they're not good enough to stop the Warriors. Unless Durant has an awful shooting night, I don't see the Rockets winning a game. I really don't.
They're going to have to make some major adjustments in order to even stay in some of these games. And I think that's the biggest
thing. And that's the thing. Do the Rockets have the mental discipline to, even if they start with those adjustments, even if D'Antoni looks at the film from game one and says, okay, here's our plan for game two, do Harden and CP3, the leaders of that team, have the mental strength and fortitude to actually execute that? Because right now, based on what I've seen from those two in their playoff careers, I don't believe that to be true.
I think the one factor that the Warriors, and it's clear in game one, is the conditioning that team is in. Like, think about it. Like, the Warriors didn't look tired at all. And the Rockets were dragging ass through that second half and pretty much gave up.
Harden looked like he was getting tired in the end, you know, the latter stages of that game, for sure.
And you can imagine, like, think about it. He was going to the rim time after time after time after time in that first half. And after a while, just getting bodies banged on you possession after possession, and the way he was doing that, things are going to get tiring. And to me, I think the craziest part of this entire series, and it's going to be a lot of fun to keep an eye on, is just the conditioning that the Warriors are in. I think it's incredible how crazy athletic all of these guys are and the pace that they continuously play at from the start of the game to the end of the game. And really, you look at the guys that they brought off the bench. I mean, Sean Livingston only played 14 minutes in this game. Nick Young only played 15. David West played a mere 4 minutes. Kevon Looney, I think, was the only person to play like 25 minutes, and that was really because at times they were struggling to find a way to defend some of these guys down on the low post. Same with Clint Capella. They were trying to contain him a little bit. But outside of that, their starters, their Hampton's five lineup played pretty much the entire game. So very interesting. And I think that's the coolest part is like I've never seen an NBA team conditioned as well as the Warriors are, especially for all the runs that they've taken over the last 3 years and the games that they've played in. Maybe that's part in testament to what they did in the regular season. You think about that. You know, people made fun of them saying that they were bored, that guys, you know, would take nights off, things like that. Maybe that's part of it, too, is that they just knew, like, hey, you know what? We don't need to go for a record-breaking season when we can just rest up and really play when it matters most in the playoffs. So I don't know. I don't know what your reaction is to the conditioning of the Warriors, but I was just kind of blown away last night against a Rockets team like that.
It's definitely impressive. I mean, these, I think, are the two premier run-and-gun teams in the league and perhaps two of the most well-conditioned teams. That being said, I mean, as far as conditioning, the thing that stood out to me was Steph Curry. This guy has only been back and active for what, some, was it like game two or three of their conference semis when he made his return after missing, you know, a couple of months or whatever it was, however long he was out. So clearly not 100% conditioning. And Curry was getting worked on the defensive end through the entirety of the first half and parts of the third quarter, you know, getting crossed over, getting dragged around, you know, helplessly trying to play defense, getting switched on to Harden a lot. And so I thought that Steph was going to be exhausted by the time he checked in for his final stretch of the fourth quarter. And when he checked in for the final stretch of the fourth quarter, he was there like battling for offensive rebounds under the basket and winning them. And then a couple of beautiful like shake and bake moves, drive and attack in the basket. Some clutch shots late as the Warriors were kind of putting this thing away. And that was what really made an impression on me. It was like, wow, Steph didn't necessarily have the biggest night stats-wise, and he wasn't draining a zillion threes. He was only 1 of 5 from downtown, only 18 points on the night. But when I expected Steph to be worn out after working his tail off on the defensive end and not having a lot of success, and also still not being at 100% conditioning wise, he impressed me with what he was doing in the fourth quarter, getting little things done.
We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're going to do some lottery stuff to wrap up, as the lottery is tonight. Very exciting for Bulls fans and every other team fan base that is in the lottery tonight. So kind of do some fun things to wrap it up here. Stay with us on Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. All right, Matt, the day we have been waiting for, I think, since what? October? Maybe even before that?
Since Jimmy Butler was traded last June.
It is finally here. We have the NBA lottery tonight. One of the more intriguing, I think, events that happens in professional sports, one of the more unique things that happens in professional sports. A lot of controversy goes around this night every single year. You know, you get the articles, you get the tweets, you get the conversation going on about, is the NBA lottery really rigged? Does the NBA have a hand in where they put their potential young stars and how they circumvent the markets and where they feel like that they need to place teams that maybe are struggling? And there's a lot of cases out there. If you're a conspiracy theorist, kind of like myself, I'm a little bit of a conspiracy junkie, so definitely this intrigues me. But The Ringer wrote a really good article about it. If you want somebody who's going to dive in to sort of the case to be made whether or not the lottery is actually rigged or not, made some good points on both sides and some arguments for both things. Obviously, tonight is a big night, though. The Bulls with a 13.9% chance of getting a top three pick. What are your thoughts? You still got anxiety? Is it built up even more so now tonight? Are you going to be a little bit disappointed if they end up getting the number six pick and everything goes the way we thought it was going to go? Anything about the lottery that you thought about today as we enter it tonight?
Let's get it over with. that's kind of how I feel at this point. I mean, we're sitting here recording this Tuesday morning, and I want it to be 6:30 p.m. Central Time so we can get it over with and we can just know one way or the other. That way, even then, once we know where the Bulls are picking, it's still not like we know who they're going to take. we could probably rule out some scenarios based on, say, if they do stay at six. Like, okay, well, if they stay at six, then, you know, say goodbye to DeAndre Ayton and Marvin Bagley and et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, at this point, it'll just be nice to know. And I don't know if it'll necessarily make me feel any differently about the season we just watched. If they do get lucky and move up, or if they don't and stay at six, because I mean, luck is luck, and there's really not much they could do. And I'm saying that as someone who doesn't believe that the lottery is rigged. I mean, I understand the conspiracy theorists. I get it. And heck, the Bulls had a 1.7% chance at the number one pick 10 years ago. 1.7%, and they got it. And you could say, because the projected number one pick was a Chicago native, that the teams with the highest odds in that 2008 draft lottery, Miami, Seattle, Minnesota, Memphis, nobody cares about those teams. Certainly not back then. They didn't necessarily have huge diehard fan bases. They didn't have as big of a global reach as the Bulls. I think the NBA, as an organization, wants the Bulls to be relevant. I think the NBA is more interesting and ratings are better and NBA Twitter is more alive when the Bulls are a relevant playoff team, because there are Bulls fans everywhere because of the dynasty years and because of Jordan. That being said, I don't see that as enough evidence for the lottery being rigged. I just don't. Hey, if the Bulls get lucky tonight, that's great. But if the Bulls get lucky tonight, and people are, the lottery's rigged. Like Chicago, a big market team, won again. Like, dude, Cleveland won. Cleveland won like 3 out of 4 years. And yeah, they had good odds to do so, but not every year that they won. And is Cleveland a big market team? No, absolutely not.
Look, I don't think the lottery is necessarily rigged. I love the conspiracy theory around it, and I love the story around it, and I have my doubts and my questions. But let me try to convince you a little bit, and maybe some of the listeners out there that are listening to this and saying, yeah, Jordan, you're a psycho. It's not rigged. Come on now. Let me throw a couple scenarios at you. This is from The Ringer. Jason Concepcion had written this about a year ago today, just kind of talking about, with all the hype and this sort of conversation that comes up every single year. He writes, these conspiracy theories that follow kind of are ones that we had in line with our Ringer Slack. So writers from The Ringer who are coming up with ideas or scenarios in which they think the NBA lottery could potentially be rigged. So here's four scenarios in four teams just kind of over the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years that could maybe support this evidence. So the first one is the 76ers were allowed to win the 2016 lottery for getting rid of Sam Hinkie. He also writes, I kind of buy into this one. So the NBA obviously doesn't like tanking. We know that. We knew that to purposely lose games, and that was one of the biggest frustrations. And I think low-key people think this is rigged because they wanted Sam Hinkie out, continuing to stop losing games, stop making it maybe a model for other NBA teams to try and follow this, and we're kind of seeing the remnants of that. So that's one. The other, that the NBA sweetened the sale of the New Orleans Pelicans, then the Hornets, to Tom Benson by awarding him the top pick in the 2012 draft, Anthony Davis, a few months later. That one's more of a popular one. That one a lot of people, I think, have talked about when they were doing the sale going to the Pelicans. That one's brought up in a lot of articles, people who write conspiracy theories about the NBA lottery. Here's another one, that Cleveland was given the top pick in 2011, Kyrie Irving, to smooth over the fallout from the decision and stop Dan Gilbert from publicly talking about tampering. The last one is that the Orlando Magic was given two consecutive lottery wins, 1992, 1993, as a reward to the DeVos family for purchasing the team. Obviously, through the Derrick Rose one out there with the minute small percent of chance that the Bulls, who were kind of meddling after the Jordan era, were able to acquire their hometown hero in Derrick Rose. So there's obviously a lot of different scenarios going out there. The conversation is awesome. I love these conspiracy theories that kind of swirl around the NBA lottery every year. And then there's one final one. You remember this from 2016 when Dikembe Mutombo tweeted out, "Congratulations to the 76ers. I'm grabbing the first pick in the NBA draft."
Yeah, I do remember that.
So people went nuts in 2016 when he did that. They're like, oh my God, the NBA lottery is completely rigged. Look, at Dikembe Mutombo knew about it, all this stuff. So it's pretty funny. Look, I don't think the NBA lottery is rigged either, but the conversation is certainly interesting and a lot of fun to
Absolutely.
Have.
Absolutely. It's... It's a conversation that's fun because you get all sorts of people with all sorts of different theories, and it's kind of like having conversations about Game of Thrones and what might happen in the season or in the series finale in the final season of the series, or people who have, you know, equivalent like Westworld's going on right now. It's like fan theories, man. It's the same for weird twisty turny TV shows, and it's the same for NBA conspiracy theories. It's fun. It's fun to talk about. At this point, I mean, I hope that the Bulls do luck their way into the top three. And I for one, will not be engaging in anybody who is on Twitter saying, it's rigged, just because I'm going to be too happy. I don't care. I'm going to block out all that negativity. If the Bulls get lucky and wind up in the top three, block out all those haters, man, and just start thinking about who the Bulls might take with that pick. Either way, you know, even if we don't get lucky tonight, I'm just glad that this phase will be over and that we can, you know, start looking at the draft combine, which is going on later this week, and start looking ahead to the draft and know for sure. You know, the hardest part is not knowing. So we still won't know who we're adding to this core, but at least we'll know one more thing, which is where we'll be drafting.
You can also have the enjoyment of, if the Bulls do get a top three pick, the enjoyment of knowing that I will have to rock red hair for the entirety of the summer
that
in the training
too.
Camp.
That too. There is an 18-point-whatever% chance that, as of tonight, Jordan will have committed himself to rocking red hair all summer long, which is just fantastic. I like those odds.
It's a tough task. I'm telling you, like, as the hours pass, the anxiety is building up. Trying to think about the ways that this is going to look. I also didn't think about the cost either. So if I don't want it to look shitty.
The cost of what? Hair dye?
I mean, if I don't want it to look shitty, I'm going to have to go get it done. But that's a conversation we can have once this happens, because realistically, I don't think it's going to happen.
You're a guy. How much have you spent on haircuts in your entire life? If it's more than $1,000, you're doing it wrong.
You don't understand. There's very few things I love in this world beyond the Chicago Bulls, and I think my hair is one of them. I told somebody on Twitter yesterday.
That's weird. I walk into a barbershop, they say, "What do you want?" I say, "I don't care, just make it shorter than it was when I walked in here."
Oh,
I'm putting my hat back on as soon as I walk out your door.
Get out of here. There are definitely people that listen to this podcast that definitely care about the way that their hair looks and won't go to a barbershop to get it chopped.
I'm not one of them. If you're paying more than $30, tip included, for a haircut, and yeah, you're doing it wrong.
Your boy right here is doing that. I pay more than $30 for my haircut. But there also is, I guarantee there's listeners out there who do that as well. So they feel me as much as I have anxiety for this and coming up. So we'll see. When it happens, probably won't happen.
Nearly 20%, man.
We'll take it from there.
Nearly 20%. Never say never.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. I hope you're going to enjoy the lottery and maybe not have as much anxiety as I will tonight watching it. But you can follow us on social media. We'll be active tonight as well on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, enjoy the NBA lottery tonight. Keep your fingers crossed. Hopefully this changes the trajectory of this rebuild. Maybe we get in that top three. Be crossing our fingers. We'll be back tomorrow with plenty of reaction to it and so much more. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Have a wonderful day, Bulls Nation. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.